Hello, Radio St. Pete. Today I have with me, I'd like to say that he is the Florida Whisperer. Author Jeff Klinkenberg really is the poet laureate of everything in Florida. With numerous books, he actually has won the Heritage Award for his Florida essays. And for many, many years, we enjoyed him in the Tampa Bay Times. Welcome, Jeff.
Well, thank you for doing this, Annette. It's good to hear your voice. And how is everything in my old hometown?
Well, everything is wonderful, certainly sunnier when you're here. And I understand now that you kind of split your time between St. Petersburg and Waynesville, North Carolina.
That's right. And the story there is, I'm 75 now, but when I was 10, my parents started going to North Carolina for a week or two every summer. And so over the years, I fell in love with it. And Susan and I bought a place in 2013. So we're here now. And strange to say, just about an hour ago, it was snowing here. So it doesn't feel like Florida right now. But I think of Florida fondly. You know, what a place for me to do my work. You know, I wanted to tell these stories. What did it mean to live and die in Florida? And so I wrote about history, nature, literature, food, art, music, folkways, crime, some politics, certainly the environment. Thanks to these generous Floridians, many who had never been covered by reporters at all, they let me follow them around, you know, as I told their stories. And sometimes I would be, you know, I traveled from Key West to Pensacola doing that. I was very lucky during that time that journalism was like that, you know. I had an editor who told me, just bring me back something interesting. So it was a great gig. It was the greatest gig imaginable.
And it was known as Real Florida. And you actually interviewed and wrote about Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, the artist who developed the famous Coppertone sign. I mean, Chesty Morgan, the highwayman, Florida Panthers, alligators, and snakes. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. How many years did you write the column?
So I came to the, you know, I was a Miami boy. And like a lot of Miami boys, you know, I came of age in the late 50s and the 60s, so fishing, snakes, all kind, tree houses, all that kind of stuff, barefoot, that kind of thing. I wrote about the outdoors at the Miami News, a paper that is no more, and came to the St. Pete Times in 1977 to do the same. And eventually that outdoors beat became Florida culture. So I would say at the same, you know, I retired at the end of 2013. And so that was probably, 38 years, something like that, where I was writing about Florida. And I grew up reading those Florida stories by, I had a mentor named Al Burt who wrote kind of a Real Florida column for the Miami Herald. Before him, there were other writers who were sort of interpreters of Florida for readers going back, you know, into the 50s. And of course, Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings, who wrote The Yearling and Cross Creek, she was, especially in her nonfiction stuff, she was writing about Real Florida. So I feel like I'm part of that legacy, reporters who really try to dive in deep into the things that make Florida, Florida. And I'm
You
kind
know,
of sorry there's, oh,
go
excuse me.
ahead. Go ahead.
There's really nobody doing that anymore consistently now. So I'm sad about that.
Well, you know,
Short.
so I'm sorry, but here's the thing. It's really a bigger beat than Florida because I put you in the same category as Herb Kane in San Francisco, Studs Terkel, people who really could get to the meat of the person they were covering or the issue they were covering and really give the flavor. You could smell, see, and feel in the stories you wrote. How did you do that?
Well, I think it's important, and this is what I would tell journalists, although I don't know if it's advice they can take anymore, just given the way things are now. But I really think reporters have to leave the office. You know, they can't write, they can't just talk to somebody on over the phone, or they can't, you know, it's my thing was, I'm going to where they are, and I'll spend some time with them. Sometimes it was a day. Sometimes I would go thinking, I'm going to spend a day with somebody here, a couple of hours, and then I would go back, you know. I did a story one time about a guy named Nathan Martin, and he was a guy, somebody I knew had bought some property up in Gilchrist County, which is east of which is west of Gainesville, and said, "Hey, I met this guy. I bought this property. I met this guy in the woods one day up there, and fascinating. Doesn't wear he doesn't he rarely wears shoes, and he just knows a lot about self-reliance." And so I went up there just thinking it'd be fun to write about somebody who doesn't wear shoes, you know, in the 21st century. And it was more than that. He was living like it was the 19th century in Florida, despite a cell phone. He was living in a house with no running water, you know. He was he knew how to hunt, he knew how to fish. He grew beautiful plant beautiful he had a beautiful garden. And I just kept going back and back and back, and I had a photographer who would go back with me, who would also shoot video. And would you like to just hear a little bit of that story? Can I just,
I
I'm not
would.
gonna.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, just, I'll just, it's a long story, so I'm not gonna read the whole thing, but just the beginning and you'll get the idea. But this is all, again, based on being there. You know, not, you couldn't do this over the phone, and it would have been hard to do just spending a couple of hours with them. But here it is, a traveling day. Nathan Martin was going to town. He was going to have a meal with the woman he loved. He usually hated wearing a shirt, but Vida would tisk tisk if he showed up with a with chest bare. He also needed to decide what to do about footwear. He hated shoes even more than he hated wearing a shirt. For as long as anyone can remember, he had tramped through the North Florida woods of Gilchrist County in naked feet. Less human than possum. They were yellow, padded, and bristling with nails, more like talons. Those feet feared no stone, stick, or snake, but maybe, just a little bit, they feared Vida. "I only wear shoes to town or church," he told me. He had last purchased a Sunday pair 2 decades ago at Walmart for $25. He had liberated a second pair from a dumpster shortly after. Grumbling, he threw those shoes into the back of the truck. If Vada gave him the stink eye for showing up for chicken and dumplings with feet exposed, he put them on. At 72, Nathan Martin was a throwback to a Florida that seemed all but gone. He lived without running water in a dilapidated house, illuminated by a single light bulb and heated by a wood stove. Not because he had to, but because he liked to. He had a phone he rarely answered, had never used a computer or owned a television or had a credit card. I was born too late, was how he explained it to me. He would be at home in the 19th century. When he died, a part of old Florida would pass away with him. He had many Florida relatives, but no children of his own. He was the last of his kind. Henry David Thoreau moved to Walden Pond as a social experiment. Simplify, simplify, wrote the philosopher who enjoyed scolding the masses of men leading lives of quiet desperation. Nathan Martin lived in the woods because he was born there and because the simple life came naturally to him. He knew his way of life suited almost nobody in the 21st century Florida, population 20 million. Unlike Thoreau, he lacked a Harvard education. He was finished with school after eighth grade. With his backwoods accent, he sounded not like a well-bred New Englander, but a character who had just stumbled out of a novel by his favorite novelist, Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings. Like Thoreau, though, he was whip smart. "He pretty much has read his way through the library," said his friend Jack Preble, who taught science and coached football at St. Petersburg Shorecrest School for decades. For the record, Nathan Martin hadn't read everything in the library. Quote, "I ain't into terror, sex, or space," he said, ruling out the genres of mystery, romance, and science fiction. But he had worked through tons of books, especially histories. On his bedside table, I saw the personal memoirs of Ulysses S. Grant, hardly a casual read. "I like the Civil War period," he explained, beginning an embarrassing interrogation of the interviewer. Anyway, that's just the beginning of that story about one of the one of the most interesting people I ever met in my life. And,
you know, honestly, Jeff, this is, you know, this would make such a great podcast every month to have you read something. These stories are, they're like Mozart. They're for all times. And our Florida is disappearing, don't you think?
Well, I think it is. I mean, and so are the people. I mean, sometimes I think the people who had curiosity about that Florida are disappearing too. You know, I sort of have been really disappointed in the kind of the nutty Florida stories, the wacky Florida stories that seem pretty popular. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I do.
The bizarre crimes, all that stuff, which is kind of a distraction, I've always thought, of what's real. I mean, and there's, Florida has some real problems, as we know, climate change, the way it's governed, environmental degradation, and I've always thought that some of those wacky Florida stories distract from that. Plus, Florida, you know, the people, there are all these interesting people that are still out there, still making their way through Florida, and they're not all like Nathan. Nathan was one of a kind. He's passed since then. I still keep in touch with his wife, Vida, his second wife, I might add. He told me he was married when he was 19. His first wife was 16. And he once told me, she said to me one day Nathan, you're too country. And that kind of ended that marriage. And Vida was a woman who he'd known since childhood, and Nathan was kind of a was a really handsome man when he was young, and she was a widow too, or she was a widow, and she called him up one day and said, "Let's have lunch." And so he found his pants, or he found some good shoes, his and got and a shirt with real buttons instead of safety pins, which was something for him, and met her for lunch, and they ended up married. She had never been to his house in the woods. They had a weekend marriage, and as part of my story is I went over there for a country lunch one day with Nathan and Vida made it. But there are people like that. They're just people that you would sometimes run into, you know? I mean, it was just like
Well,
I say, it was quite a gig.
and Randy Wainwright talks, he loves, we've interviewed him, and he has that same sensibility where he captures in fiction the real Floridians. And you have written so many books that go at this from so many ways, in addition to the award-winning columns and the books. I mean, you have Seasons of Real Florida, Alligators and B Flat, Real Florida, Key Lime Pie, Building a Better Tomato, Dispatches from the Land, The Wind Engineers, Son of Real Florida, The Shark Attack, Pilgrim in the Land of. Most of these books are still available on Amazon, isn't that right?
Yes, yeah. And some of them are in bookstores, you know, not all of them. And you know, University Press of Florida started publishing my books, I want to say in 1922, and at this moment all four of those books are in print. Before that I have two books. I'm not even sure if they're still in print that were published by a North Carolina publishing house. So I've been pretty lucky, you know, and I love having those books out, and I love that I do have I still have a lot of readers, you know, I still hear from them.
Oh yes, and I am one of them, and I have just actually bought a couple of them for friends of mine who actually graduated the program from Gary Mormino, who said I just picked up I believe it is the Alligator book, isn't it? Alligator and B Flat, that has the stories about modern rogues. There's Miss Ruby, whose fruit stand features rutabagas, an 85-year-old resident on the remote island of Cayo Casa. That is that one, right? The Alligators in B flat
Yes, I
book.
believe so. And I mean that's the one where Chessie Morgan is in that, one of the most remarkable people I've ever met. And if that closes the book, and before that, there's another book about there's another story about a woman who was a Haitian missionary who lived in Tampa, who was kind of a matriarch for a lot of people, who was a genius herself. She and Chessie Morgan, easily the two most amazing women I've ever written about. But anyway, yes, and that book also has the Alligators in B flat, which people really enjoy. You know, the alligators bellow, male alligators bellow in this low B flat. And so I wrote and wrote about that and some of the studies that led to that.
You went to the
But
St. John's River campsite of the 19th century botanist William Bartram.
yes.
Can you share that? That's sort of a funny, I enjoyed that immensely. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about that?
So William Bartram's father was John Bartram, who was King George III's botanist. So we're going into the 16th century here. And William was John's son. And John, well, John Bartram, William's father, was very active in politics and so forth. William was kind of a dreamer who he liked to draw pictures of plants and everything, and he was kind of a disappointment to his father. His father tried to set him up in business in North Florida, the St. Johns River. He failed as a business person. And then finally, an Englishman named John Fothergill, I think his name was, and I'm going by memory here, asked Bartram, William Bartram, if he would tour the South and make an inventory of plants and animals in the South. And the Florida stuff is really the most fascinating, in my opinion. Came into Florida in 1773. He had a native guide who abandoned him, and he was just in his in a boat with a sail, mostly on the St. Johns River and some of the lakes, by himself, stopping to make an inventory of plants and animals. Had amazing alligator experiences. Bartram was an amazing artist, and his stuff was so accurate. But when he did his drawings of alligators, he made them look like dinosaurs, and you can only imagine how encountering alligators, sometimes a little too close to comfort, made him do that. But anyway, he ended up at islands on the St. Johns, and I found a guy named Clay Henderson, who was the president of Florida Audubon for many years, who was also a Bartram fan, named one of his kids Bartram. And we did this river trip ourselves, where we went to places where Bartram had visited in 1773. So that was a real kick. Bartram's book, which published in 1791, is still in print, and it's still interesting to read if you're a dyed-in-the-wool Floridian. And it's written it's an interesting and strange book, because part of it is just descriptions of plants and animals and blah 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 blah, and then part of this is this he writes in this romantic prose that scientists often avoid, and it's where he's actually writing in a transcendental way that influenced the transcendentalists of North America in Massachusetts, like Emerson and Thoreau. And Bartram's work was much more, turned out, eventually, originally it was much more popular in Europe than it was in North America. Not so true now, but still in print, 1791. And over the years, I've met many scientists who still read Bartram and then go look for plants that nobody has seen for a couple hundred years, and they sometimes find those plants, you know. So I'm a Bartram guy.
Yeah,
I'm a
I love this.
Marjorie
And
Kinnear
also,
Rawlings guy.
right, a New Yorker's famous writer who went looking for the ghost orchid. I mean, these are all that pay homage to Bertram. So, Radio St. Pete listeners, we have been chatting with an incredibly talented writer, author, former journalist. You're never a former journalist, journalist with the Tampa Bay Times. You knew his column. We miss his column. Jeff, before we leave, are you doing any new writing while you're in North Carolina? Something up your sleeve?
Well, I wrote a there's a National Geographic book out now. It's called The Path of the Panther. It was photographed by my friend Carlton Ward Jr., whom he interned at the Tampa Bay Times, the St. Pete Times, many years ago. We worked together. We had similar interests. And Carlton spent 4 years with camera traps. These are remote cameras that he would plant in areas where panthers still live, and still cameras and also video cameras. And he and friends produced a documentary that recently won an Emmy. It's like the best nature documentary of, I want to say, 2023, maybe it's 2022. That's also called Path of the Panther. And it's you can still see it on Hulu and the Disney Channel and the National Geographic Channel. And National Geographic also published a book full of his photographs. And I was honored. Carlton asked me if I would write an essay about the times I had seen panthers in South Florida. So I have an essay in that. So I've done a little writing here and there. I'm getting ready to teach a course in memoir writing up here. The tricky thing about my writing is that most of my writing, as I told you, was sometimes spent where I'd be out reporting for a week, sometimes a week or two, and then spending a week or two writing something. And that's expensive. And I don't have places where I can publish work like that anymore. I can write something off the top of my head from time to time, but the kind of stuff I love to do, where I spent a lot of time with people and then was able to publish it. There aren't many opportunities like that anymore. So I'm a little stuck kind of with my old stuff and finding new projects.
Well, I almost see a documentary in your future about your own work and things that you've covered and your story. So, Jeff, I want to hope that you will come back on Radio St. Pete to share some more of your writing and your thoughts. We thank you so much for illuminating Florida in a way that no one has before or after. And we look forward to seeing more from you. Folks, Jeff Klinkenberg's books can be found on Amazon and local bookstores, at your local independent bookstores or your box bookstores to stock his books. Every one of them are more amazing than the next. I have three more to read, Jeff, and I want to thank you so much today for sharing your insights.
Well, thank you, ma'am. It was my pleasure. And hello, Floridians.
And from that, Radio St. Pete says, Jeff Klinkenberg loves Florida, and we love Jeff. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.